Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage of Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is about Lily, which is part of the Best of selection. So Lily is by Ink Stories, which you may know from 1979 Revolution, the video game, as well as the VR experiences of Hero and Fire Escape. So Lily is a screen life thriller. So you're basically set within the context of Iran, and that you, on that position of actually kind of being an authoritarian state, you're a hacker that's also participating in this level of surveillance. And so you have this choice as to whether or not you're going to be more of a black hat or white hat hacker. And you're kind of in this gray space, this kind of liminal zone of being in between. And so you're getting these instructions. So basically it's a installation where you're walking into this room where these computer monitors, and it's not a VR headset or anything. It's basically a screen-based type of experience, but you're doing it with other people at the same time. And it's kind of got this whole installation as if you're kind of walking behind the scenes of a Big Brother surveillance state. And so you're basically doing these different interactions on the screen while watching the cinematic cutscenes in the film play out in front of you. And you have these different dynamics that are exploring these themes of surveillance and control. And so the context is you're embodying a hacker within the surveillance state in the authoritarian government, and you're watching someone in their home, and you're doing this through a computer communications technologies devices. And so the overall center of gravity is very much this kind of Fire Element agency. It's very much driven by these interactions and these gameplay loops that you're playing, but it's also very story driven. So a lot of the rewards for doing these different actions are these cinematic cutscenes that then you get a little bit more of the story as you continue to play out. Also, the main character is this woman who is kind of this Lady Macbeth type of character. So they're explicitly kind of leaning upon Macbeth to kind of bring those tropes back into this current day situation of Iran and this authoritarian regime. There's also a lot of the environmental and embodied presence, in the sense that you're embodied as a character and being addressed as somebody within the context of a narrative as like this hacker that is doing the surveillance. But there's also this larger context of the surveillance state that you're in. And so there's a site-specific installation that is creating this kind of theatrical staging. There's not VR, and you're primarily interfacing with a computer screen within the context of this hiker-like space, and you're watching various actions unfold under this surveillance footage that's presumably in real time in the context of the story, and you're primarily interfacing with a computer screen, so this screen-based thriller. And there's also a number of different choices you have to make. So in terms of the air element and the possibility spaces and the mental and social presence, there's a possibility spaces of choices to make. There's also these different endings. So based upon what you do, you'll get a different QR code that will categorize you into a bit of an in-group or out-group and becomes a bit of your identity in terms of like what choices you go down. And then most of the different interactions that you're having are coming through this computer screen. And so you have this instructions are coming through reading these chat windows with this other character that's behind the scenes that's telling you and giving you instructions and also giving you hints and clues and information along the way. So it's this kind of dynamic chat type of experience that you're solving these various puzzles. And you have this kind of mental friction where you have to solve the puzzle in order to kind of get the larger context for the story that's unfolding. And so there's also these symbolic connections between Macbeth and all the history and the story of Macbeth. And so you're able to lean upon more of these symbolic connections between that story within the context of this story. And overall, the themes around this kind of authoritarian tendencies, as well as to quote challenges and to question power, control, and complicity, and also like bringing up these different questions of justice and what role are you going to play in justice. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Navid and Vasiliki happened on Sunday, August 31st, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
My name is Navid Kansari. I'm one of the co-founders at Ink Stories. And Ink Stories, and with my partner Vasiliki, we have been creating virtual reality, XR, and video games that really kind of merge real-life stories with interactivity.
Hi, Vasiliki Kansari, and co-founder of Ink Stories, as a producer and writer and also director. And I think Navid pretty much captured what we do.
Nice. Maybe each of you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into this space.
Sure. So I started off in film, made my first feature film in the late 90s, and was fortunate enough then to meet up with the guys at Rockstar Games. That led to me becoming the cinematic director of the GTA franchise, GTA 3, Vice San Andreas, and then just basically every game that came out of Rockstar. And it just was an incredible learning curve to bring in elements like motion capture, cinematics, editing, all the things that were like tools that we use in film into this new kind of cinematic medium. So that was kind of where it started. And then with Vasiliki, we did a couple of documentaries, and that led to us then really creating Ink Stories and, you know, the focus being on, again, why are we not leveraging real stories in the possibly the most popular and largest global medium in terms of entertainment?
So my area of focus as a student was in cultural anthropology and film studies. And what's funny is very early on, I remember we were sort of working in these intersectional spaces, like with these ethnographic films, making these like CD-ROMs or interactive, like how can we bring in maps or these all of these different elements. And then I continued and got my master's in visual anthropology. So my foundation was really in documentary filmmaking and ethnographic filmmaking. And within visual anthropology, I think the approach is always like the medium is secondary, and how are you sort of finding the right medium that matches the audience? And so then worked in New York for many years on the sort of early iterations in broadcast television, New York Times Television, making the early iterations of reality TV, which was more observational, and then independent docs. And then when Naveed and I met one another, I think there was just sort of this like lightning bulb moment where we recognized that we both really want to tell these very humanistic stories about the human condition, but you know, reality is often stranger than fiction. And so how do we capture the nuance? And not only the nuance, but all of the research materials that go into making documentaries, and knowing that gamers go into their gaming experiences and look like there, some people are completionists and they just want to go like really deep into the subject matter. And so we thought, how do we take some of these research materials and bring them into the experiences themselves? And so that was sort of like a flashpoint where we really pursued this hybrid art of bringing interactivity and new formats and emerging mediums to telling these like very humanistic stories.
Yeah, and over the past 11 years, I've had a chance to record probably somewhere between 2,500 or 3,000 interviews and publish around 1,600 of them. And so there is always a much larger backlog. So when I saw that I was coming here to Venice and going to be seeing your piece, I was like, I've got these three unpublished interviews that I wanted to get out. But it was interesting for me to go back to 2017 and hear what you were saying around like the narrative innovations session at GDC, and then the piece about Iran 1979 that you had done, and then also the idea of Verite Games and then Verite VR with Hero and then Fire Escape. And so there's always this intersection between cinema verite and the film tradition of documentary, but also with games and interactivity. And so just curious to hear how you kind of recount your own journey into this space and leading up to presenting Lily first at Cannes and now here at Venice Immersive.
I think recalling this experience, or recalling kind of where we started and where we've kind of come about, I think it's actually really looking at our audiences and seeing what kind of gets them excited, what keeps them engaged. You know, making a game about the 1979 doesn't necessarily scream commercial hit, but at the same time, if it's done authentically and if it's done with depth, there's an audience in the gaming world that are super into not just learning, but like engaging and digging in deep, and in that process being entertained, and then in the aftermath having conversations about a world that they didn't know. And at the core of it, really, that's what games are. Games introduce us to new worlds that we can interact with, whereas like in cinema you observe the world. In games you get to participate in that world. And so for us to be able to allow you, in 1979's case, participate with the Iranian Revolution, with Hero allow you to participate in the aftermath of the destructive war that's taking place in Syria and to understand what the civilian life is like. These are the worlds that we kind of open up for you to kind of interact with. And because they're based in reality, they allow you to understand maybe or get a glimpse of what the world is like around us through this incredible kind of medium. So we've always seen like there's just been a plethora of information that comes from the real world, that comes from real stories. And gaming actually allows you to embrace the depth of those stories rather than just a wonderful single perspective of what that narrative is of that world. So I think we've always kind of had our feet planted very much in world creation. Our world creation just comes from the depth of the stories that are taking place in real life.
Yeah, I think Lily is really sort of an evolution of our work in so many ways, and I haven't had enough time to properly reflect on it. And I think part of it is, and the consistent thread and which has evolved really is the agency in building around audience. And, you know, looking back at 1979 and having the player step into the shoes of an 18-year-old photojournalist on the streets during the revolution and making moral choices. And, okay, so how are you making these choices? And then next project, say Blindfold, where it was more of like gestural agency. You're sitting there in an interrogation and using your body in VR, interactive VR, where you're making choices to the interrogator, and that's progressing the story. And again, you're complicit within that world. Your presence matters, and your presence is integral to the storytelling and sort of giving some of that authority. I think that's what really excites us, is how do you give authority and agency to your audience so they are a director as well. And then kind of flashing forward with Fire Escape as well, the audience. And again, this is a little bit drifting in the arena of theater, whereby the audience's reaction and that liveness, it only occurs when the audience is there and participating and co-directing and co-authoring this story. And Fire Escape, depending on where you're looking, of course, that is creating agency. So you're reordering the story. The story is coming together in these different pieces, which takes on different meanings according to how you're engaging and interacting. And Lily, similarly, we're allowing someone age. And so like 79 is, you know, historical fiction in a sense. And so with Lily, it's like, how are we resuscitating this world of 400 years ago with these archetypes, like this mysterious, complicated, villainous archetype of Lady Macbeth? And how can we resuscitate that and bring it into sort of this like verite moment, but really stretch and push on the boundaries of like what documentary means, like what does it mean to step into a moment? And so with Lily, again, it's like bringing agency, but also complicitness. And also adding this other layer of the technology being part of the narrative mechanism, but also conceptually sort of double downing on bringing the meaning. And then also bringing in AI and bringing in all of these various tools which are evolving. But how do we stay true to our core and not be in service of the tools, but allow the tools to be in service of the storytelling and the audience experience?
Yeah, and love if you could set the context for Lily in terms of the two main characters, in the sense that there's Lily, but then there's the user, who's us as the audience, who is kind of embodying the archetypal big brother, the powers of surveillance and authoritarian control and manipulation. And so using all the tools of a hacker to break in and influence or shape and surveil. So it's sort of you're embodying an anti-hero in some ways, but through that embodiment, you're also able to describe the larger system of all these tools of control and manipulation. And so it's kind of a twist of what you would normally expect for how you might approach this, but to be behind the scenes in the seat of trying to manipulate and control a civilian in Iran, maybe you could describe a little bit about this larger context that you're setting up here as the audience is stepping in the shoes of the big brother in some ways.
Absolutely. So, you know, this project is in partnership with the Royal Shakespeare Company and us looking to do an adaptation of Macbeth. And so when we initially started looking into this material, we were always quite fascinated by Lady Macbeth. And as we started digging in, we started seeing a similarity to the limitations that are put on her based on her gender as what was existing in a country like Iran and other parts of the world, many parts of the world, where gender segregation is very much alive and keeping people down. And so for us, it became an interesting way of, okay, as we started digging in, the big brother role wind up becoming something that we see as part of the patriarch society that's actually limiting the ability for citizens in Iran, but more importantly, and even with greater impact, women within Iran. So we just started seeing these like interesting kind of parallels, but rather than having, let's say, the luxury of just like, doing an adaptation and throwing it up on screen, we need to make you as the protagonist, as the person that's able to kind of explore and uncover. And so we took a look at what are the things that are limiting citizens, and that's access to information, that's the ability to connect to one another, the ability for freedom of press, the ability to access entertainment, to become one with the world rather than have these digital walls kind of isolate you, and in that give this authoritarian power, this theocracy, at least in Iran, the ability to control and keep down this kind of people. So for us, it was like, well, these tools have existed. Many could argue that these tools are there to keep you safe. And so what we notice is that, and this conversation is very much taking place with AI, we need to be aware of the benefits, but also recognize that the benefits in different hands can actually wind up stripping you away of your rights and of your personal data and of your freedom. So for us, it became an interesting way to kind of bring this element, because we do like the flip-flop of it. We want you to initially understand how you can use these tools to engage with Lily, to be able to get into her story. But then as we start seeing her, like you should in a great story, you should start kind of recognizing that she is also a victim. But what's great is that we get to watch her go through this evolution. And so as a result, the same time that I said we've got this flip-flop, we can now use these tools to possibly help her to take down this authoritarian system. And I think that element is something that really kind of resonates, the ability to fight back, but also use Iran as a stage, which most of the globe likes to point the finger to and say, oh, look over there. And hopefully through this experience, understand like, oh, no, that actually is taking place within my own home, whether I live in Osaka, whether I live in New York, whether I live in Toronto, Helsinki, Paris, wherever it is, these are the same tools of oppression that we think are being used for good, but on the flip of a dime can be reversed. So that element is really, really exciting for me. If I was a player, that ability to use these tools in these multiple different ways with different outcomes is really, really rich.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just to add to that, part of the ethos is how do we bring to light these sort of hidden realities and the social engineering that's taking place around us. And I guess a really strong parallel and really beautiful parallel for Lily is in the world of Macbeth, you have the witches who control the flow of supernatural information, and with that comes great power and not really much responsibility. And it sort of plays with this idea of free will and what is our relationship to free will within these sort of information systems. And so what we brought into the world of Lily was, okay, who are sort of the contemporary keepers of information? And those are hackers, right? And so how do we complicate the truth as opposed to glazing over the truth, right? And simplifying it. And so part of that, so our hackers are controlling the flow of digital information, and yet the complicated reality of that is we are all complicit in that. We are surveilling just as much as we are being surveilled. And so this is part of this like really large digital ecosystem, which is we're really only at the precipice of, as we know, as we move more and more into sort of like this digital social engineering as AI takes more precedence. And so, you know, we're not pretending to have any of the answers. It's just how do we sort of take these like radical perspectives and looking at dismantling these systems of authoritarianism and like, what do we need to do in order to do that? And how complicit are we?
Yeah, it's really striking to me just to see a project like this premiere at Cannes, you know, just a number of months ago, and now the amount of democratic backsliding that's been happening in the United States and just how much this could very much be set in the United States rather than Iran. And like you said, it could be anywhere. So I don't know how the larger context has changed. If when I was playing through the experience, it felt like an extra chilling effect of just to see, you know, that we are, if nothing else, on the way towards the same path and perhaps already there. So, yeah, anyway, that was some of my reaction, was to see how close to home it was hitting, even though it's set in a different country in Iran, like you said, like point the finger at Iran. But yeah, just to see how it's spreading everywhere.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things about Lily that we should share is that we're just getting started. And so this is going to be a full adaptation of Macbeth. So this is kind of a piece that we brought to the immersive world, but our goal is to actually do the full adaptation. And as you said, we're on a roller coaster of endless like challenges to our democracy, to our information, to press, to our own sense of security, to our privacy. And so we're actually emboldened to bring more of these elements as this project kind of progresses. Take a looking at the attack that took place on Iran, to not tell this story and have that as a part of the experience. So this is organically also adapting as this project manifests itself and goes closer and closer to its completion by drawing in from the present day kind of happenings on a regular basis. And we're really looking to also bring about tools on top of the game, create our own version of a ChatGPT that the players can kind of interact with, that is going to just have a plethora of this kind of data, so that when, if people wanted to, they can almost like disengage with what's taking place and engage in other ways about what's taking place in their world, and drawing from the similarities, but at the same time drawing from 400 years of potential adaptations of Macbeth, you know, the endless amount of backstories. And I think that's something that I've always loved about the gaming audiences, is that you have a huge portion of them that love to be completionists. They want to uncover everything, and we are sitting on a gold mine, both from the Macbeth text, but also from what's taking place in Iran, but also from the larger conversation of security, how it's kind of manifested itself to this particular point, what is being done, what's taking place politically and globally, and being able to put this all in there. And I think the other thing that I think is really important to kind of point out is that this particular text that is celebrated by so many is also limited to so many. You know, the translations don't necessarily come across perfectly in Farsi, in Mandarin, in other languages. So for us, this is a way of also bringing Shakespeare to a whole new audience, a global audience, in a language that is respectful to the way that Shakespeare wrote, that rhythm and that rhyme and those words, but to a larger audience. So in a weird way, we might be introducing Macbeth or Lady Macbeth through Lily to parts of the world that only know of Shakespeare in a very cold translation that's made for school books.
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate to be working with Emma Smith. She's the foremost scholar of Shakespeare from University of Oxford. And her tagline, which I totally love, is, forget the old chestnut that Shakespeare would be writing for film. Lily shows that Shakespeare would be writing for games. And I think what I kind of take from that is not only this tradition of storytelling and the personal being politically radical in developing these archetypes and these characters and these story worlds, but for us, there is an urgency and a really profound sense of responsibility. I think for us, it's about really reaching audiences. And so the medium of video games is such a powerful tool, in that what's sort of unique about gamers, as opposed to film audiences, I would say, and I'm not sure how to put it in terms of immersive audiences, but for game audiences, they're interested in new worlds. And so there aren't the same sort of traditional barriers for entry of something being super different. I think that's like a bonus, and it ignites curiosity and interest. And so for us, there is this sort of heavy moment. And what we know is human rights isn't something that you can rest on your laurels. It's something that you're continually fighting for. And we're in this very particular moment in time where we feel like being able to share this story of ambition and power and free will and authoritarianism and the control of the patriarchy is something which can actually create impact. What we saw with 1979, which was so immensely humbling, I think nothing was greater than those sort of like rogue emails that we received in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m. or whatever, when you know someone was like alone in their thoughts. And hey, I just completed 1979. I've never met someone from the Middle East before. And all of a sudden, I feel this sort of like connection that I understand a little bit of what was not only taking place politically, but on a human level. And I think that is something that motivated me initially to get involved in cultural anthropology and filmmaking, and sort of the immediacy and the capability to communicate and create these dialogues, and to see that happening in real time with gaming audiences who, for such a long time, you know, we've sort of siloed gaming audiences and sort of dumbed them down, and to recognize that there is great reward in telling more sophisticated, complicated stories for gaming audiences.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear a little bit more of how this collaboration with the Royal Shakespeare Company came about, because it seems like basing it on Macbeth seems to be a pretty key foundation that you're building on. So, like, how did this connection happen?
So we were approached by Sarah Ellis, who heads up digital at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and they were looking of branching out beyond what they've done theatrically. They'd also had done a few during COVID, some digital performances that were being able to be shared with audiences abroad. And so as a result, I think they were looking to do something new. They had seen our work before. They'd experienced Hero. They had played 1979. And so we just really initially started off in terms of like, well, let's talk about what can be done. Really an exploration kind of stage. But Macbeth was definitely the story. And the reason for that is that Macbeth is the most popular of the Shakespearean plays, but in terms of audiences. So that's really how the conversation started. And as we were able to have creative sessions with members of the creative team at the RSC, we were able to kind of start digging in, you know, beyond the play and the text that we kind of read. And so initially we were looking at just creating a straight immersive experience. But then the conversation started coming about, well, how can we have a greater impact than, rather than having it based on a location, how can we make this go global? And so that we kind of said, well, let's have our cake and eat it too. So we're like, well, why don't we focus on building the digital content around a game so that can kind of live on and can kind of be and reach large audiences while also establishing an immersive experience that really draws you in through visual pieces that, you know, alludes to the challenges that Macbeth had. And obviously, like, his whole deal and her initial deal is very much based on these prophecies. They're going to be partaking in acts that really no one should see. So the element of secrecy, the element of being watched, who's being watched, the element of paranoia, and all of this stuff kind of started becoming a part of this melting pot of our story. And they were extremely open to where we could take it. So we felt really like held and respected as we really kind of spearheaded the project in the direction it should take. So it's just been kind of like a progression. And so we were fortunate enough through our relationships, then as we started kind of doing the game design, we also partnered up with Zar Amir, who is the actress in Lily and had won the Best Actress at the Cannes Film Festival 2 years ago for a movie called Holy Spider. And so that collaboration allowed us to really kind of enrich not only just the performance, but through her company Alambic, the Iranian element of it. And so we had like this incredible balance of like these creative powerhouses on the Royal Shakespeare side, Alambic on this side, and us as the directors, designers, bringing this all together and going forward. So it's been a continual work in progress. The adaptation of the play has been an enormous endeavor. And yet it's been unbelievably kind of gratifying to take something that is actually a text and then adapting it to the real kind of world. So I think that element of it is also what drew Sarah. Something that she had said to us from the beginning was like, this needs to be a real lived experience, and this is why we're coming to you guys, because this is what you guys do.
Nice. And I'm just curious to hear a bit about this world building process, because you're diving into not only the Big Brother authoritarian aspects of Iran, but also generalized, independent of the context of Iran, into any sort of technological surveillance, but also like the hacker hacktivism. And when I say hacktivism, that's usually for people who are doing positive activism, but there's also like black hat hackers who are like, you know, using it to help control or to serve their own needs. Or so just curious, the research process and to make it really authentic in a way that would be plausible, the things that are technologically possible, but also the terminology, the lingo, just the whole world building aspect. So I'm just curious to hear where you begin.
Oh, well, where do we begin? Good question. Of course, so much of our work centers on Iran. And so there is like this base sort of knowledge and body of research that we have access to. And of course, Navid's lived experience and his family's lived experience. But really, I think it was, again, leaning into the collaboration with the Royal Shakespeare Company, there was such a creative workshopping taking place in how do we maintain that level of integrity with the world that Shakespeare created with Macbeth, which Macbeth was already an adaptation from a previous story. So how do we bring in these parallels? And this was actually, when we started developing it, it was before the Mahsa Amini killings. And so what's incredible is that there's just been this like catch up where the technology of surveillance and all of that sort of became that much more amplified as we started working on the project. So we're working with the Royal Shakespeare Company in terms of adapting the world and like, what does it mean to be in a place where positional power and the disruption of order is relevant to the story? And then we were working with some like Homeland Security researchers out of DC too, really looking at what are some of the like authentic tools of surveillance that are used contemporarily and how people circumvent them. And this is also a process that we're still involved in as we're continuing to make this adaptation. Is that? Alembic, of course,
yeah.
Working with Alembic.
In all of our projects, we kind of know we live and die by an audience that's going to put us under the magnifying glass for every little piece that we put in. And so as a result, we've always had, and I've had this actually in our fiction projects back in the day, and we've always had a very intense and large research department. And so as a result, we went into looking at everything from like, who's buying security surveillance? What countries are making it? What are they doing? How are they testing it? So we looked at China. We looked at how China's really like using the Uyghur population and looking at them. So that opened up a whole bunch of doors. We looked at hackers, exactly like you said. We looked at black, white, and gray. And then we're like, oh my God, this is like what we say all the time, is that there is no black and white and that we live in a world of gray. And this is literally the name that they've tagged for these hackers. So we started drawing in from that. And then in terms of on the technology side, we just started doing an incredible amount of research. And quite honestly, we're always being inundated as just like regular citizens about like, be careful of your phone. They're always listening to you. You know, your pictures could be used for this. I mean, the endless amount of articles that have come out in terms of like how our data is being abused, how your pictures could be transformed. So all of this material is kind of out there. We just wind up jumping in and doing an incredible amount of research. Because interestingly enough, our research wind up becoming assets for our experiences. They don't become something that you use and then from that come to the story. They are a part of the story. They need to legitimize the story. But also we need to start thinking, okay, well, so if this is how you hack a phone, how do you then make this actually interactive? How do you make this not as ridiculously complicated as what you need to do with that phone and make it so that it can allow for fluidity, It can allow for rewards, but it can also acknowledge the truth of what's taking place. So I would just say, like, research for us is not something that we do to help create the story. Research is a part of that story. And every element, especially for Lily, is being pulled from all corners of the world, because all corners of the world, on the right or on the left, are leveraging these tools to learn more about the people either they want to help, manipulate, or suppress. Yeah,
and I should thank you for nudging me to go check out the Architecture Biennale, because in there was a big, massive two walls infographic of the evolution of technology across many contexts and like over a 500-year period. I'm not sure if you saw that.
Yeah, I did. It was incredible. And there was also, I don't know if you saw the other screen, which was basically a data dump of all the places in the world where acts of violence are taking place, how those acts of violence are being defined. And then at the bottom, in the bottom right corner, it said these are only the ones that have been reported. And so it's really, really interesting how it's out there. It's just really a matter of how we want to engage it. And look, let's be super honest about it. Most people want to put their heads in the sand, because it's overwhelming to know that we're being listened to, that my phone could get hacked into. We've all had that weird little thing where suddenly, like, something goes off on our phone and we don't know where it came from or what that sound is, or how did this microphone just suddenly come on? And so I think that these are just key things that we don't want to force people in anything. We want them just to engage. And if in that engagement, it can allow them to be entertained, because that's how you want to bring them up, but allow them to actually have conversation, I feel like we've kind of done our job, you know, in terms of as storytellers and bringing these important subjects to the forefront of entertainment. You know, the one thing that is really kind of important is this stuff could get super heavy. It could get almost like boring. Our objective is to, through the use of Shakespeare, through the use of gaming, through a strong narrative that takes you to another world, bring these things to kind of the forefront.
Yeah, there's a philosopher named Timothy Morton who has this concept of a hyper-object, which is that there are systems like capitalism or surveillance or technology in general that are so complicated that it's hard for us to have a real concept on. It's constantly changing and evolving, but also spanning across space and time. And I think that infographic does a good job of laying out the evolution of technology and how it's across all domains of human experience. But I feel like a story like this gives us a narrative through line through this really complicated world that we live in a way that is allowing us to actually be behind the Wizard of Oz and behind the curtain, actually controlling and manipulating some of these technologies and orchestrations of control and manipulation and persuasion, and gives us a little bit of a sense of what's possible, that then at the end of it, walking out of it, seeing like, oh, wow, there's this potential capacity that is out there in the hands of both hackers and authoritarian governments, but also major corporations that are a big part of surveillance capitalism and tracking all of our data. And so it's not just the governments or independent hackers, but also these corporations that have access to all this data and the way that algorithms manipulate and control us. But I think a lot of that can be very elusive and abstract and like a hyper object way, difficult to really pin down or understand. But I think this narrative approach that was really quite effective of having an entry point of walking into a video installation or a spatial installation that gives you a sense of all the cameras. You don't know quite what you're walking into, and now you're at the seat of the big brother authoritarian overlooking this character as she's going through the story. So anyway, I think the takeaway for me was just a way of taking something that's very complicated and allowing me to have a direct embodied experience of it. So
yeah, that's amazing. Thank you. And I think for us, what's also really, really a cornerstone of the work is taking this fiercely feminine perspective within these worlds of the power structures, right? It's like an onion. It's like you have the patriarchy, and then you have surveillance authoritarianism, and you have all of these systems of control and authority around you. And so I think so often we see these sort of like technologically oppressive systems through more of a gendered lens. And so for us, taking this archetype of Lady Macbeth, who is complicated and mysterious on her own right, and sort of putting her in this world and peeling back the layers of these systems of power and also the formulas and systems of storytelling, right? It's not this hero's journey or what starts off as a hero's journey gone wrong. It turns into more of a heroine's journey whereby her madness, which is in the original text, and then she kind of dithers off the page, her madness becomes an inflection point whereby it becomes an awakening. And so we really mine for those spaces within the text to really represent more of that nuance of that feminized journey of allyship working against these power structures.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear around the game design elements, because when I was playing the experience, I was playing next to two other people, and we were making different choices along the way, but then there'd be these convergence points where I'd look to the left or right and see that there was kind of a through line of a narrative arc that seemed to be consistent across each of the experiences. But my individual experience was that I felt like using a lot of the metaphors of a desktop computer where there's a chat that I'm having with another person who's giving me instructions and sending me files and open up and install something, and then to basically step through what would normally be a number of different actions of opening up and installing an application and taking action, but are sort of a little bit more like a puzzle game that then is gating the next sort of narrative cutscene that's being delivered to push the story forward. So in terms of thinking around agency and interactivity and participation, just curious to hear how you marry that with the narrative structure, if it's like more of a linear narrative, if there's branching at some point, you make a choice at the end as to whether or not you're going to, you know, well, I won't say what the choice is, but there's a choice that you make and you have to decide, and that also will unveil for you a QR code, which then you can scan and then have this interaction with a chatbot afterwards to have more conversation. But yeah, just curious to hear around this marrying of the narrative design, but also the interactivity and how you start to think around what you're trying to get out of the user participating and interacting in this way.
I think our main objective when it came to game design was to really create an interactive experience that strips away all the that doesn't allow for fluidity. And so, as you kind of mentioned, like, we've got elements of puzzles that they keep certain parts of the story gated. And as you kind of unlock that, allows you to kind of proceed and lets that narrative kind of spill out. And so as a result, there's an endless curiosity. There's a combination of in the design of like achievement that's being driven by curiosity as to what's kind of next. Meanwhile, you have fluidity to interact with other things that aren't gated at all, but are bits and bytes of information or visual cues that you can kind of explore and kind of dig into. So the interactive really is playing hand in hand with the narrative, the interactivity allowing the narrative to kind of play out. Saying that, because we wanted to have a strong presence narratively, there's also moments where, unlike traditional game designs where it's just like action, 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 where we actually want you to just engage with the performance that's kind of taking place. But that in itself is actually, I would say, interactivity, because it might be considered passive because you're not crunching a lot of the your mouse and moving your mouse around all over the place, but you are observing, you're listening, because you know that what's taking place on the screen has the potential of unlocking that next stage. So it's been a real kind of interesting balance, and we've been actually looking at cinema as a really interesting example, this genre of cinema that we think is really coming out from young filmmakers who are excited to engage with the tools that they have. So screen life thrillers, where it's about your phone, it's about your desktop and so forth. This is now probably the most prevalent screen that the entire globe engages with. They know how to engage with this. They know how to swipe. They know. So if they already know that, we don't have to educate them. So, wow, we've just crossed a huge barrier in allowing fluidity. And one of the great things about being at Cannes and being at Venice is that this is not a gaming community. And yet we are seeing at least 95% of the people that are going into this are completing the full experience. They're not finding that barriers. And I think that just screams out loud of the potential of audiences that we can tap into. Then you bring in the narrative, which is extremely exciting. It just allows people to not think that they have to be a gamer in order to engage with this experience. And that was a real hardcore principle that we wanted to create with this project in terms of interactivity, and then the adaptation of the story being kind of like the reward rather than it being the cutscene that glues the gameplay together. Our story winds up becoming rewards of what you can unlock through these kind of puzzle challenges that exist in our daily lives in terms of security.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always an ongoing complication when you look at experiences or engage with them, is that tension between narrative and interactivity and narrative and branching. And so for us, that's really always been sort of a core element that we like to focus on delivering and bringing sort of valuable and sort of meaningful engagement. And so with Lily, it was really important to develop this kind of naturalistic cadence between engagement, but like not like constant engagement, but like how do we interweave this idea of viewing, this idea of digging deeper within the files, this idea of, you know, you're doing the puzzles and that puts you in your, what I call your detective brain, is when you're trying to complete or function in a certain way, which cuts you off from your sort of emotional brain, which is like taking in the larger, bigger picture. And so for us, it was like, how do we develop this cadence? And again, this is like every time you make something, it's like research and experimentation. And I think that's when you're on the best path, because you're treading down a new road of like, how do you create that cadence which puts you in your detective puzzle brain, and then you feel the reward, and then you're in sort of this other space where you're taking in more of a narrative, but the narrative that you also have agency with. So I think when I think of the interactivity in Lily, it's not just the choices that you're making, which are clearly branching points, but it's also like how fast you're moving. So when you receive your sort of final symbol at the end, that's as a result of an algorithm crunching all of these sort of player behaviors, some of which is like how fast you're moving through, how many windows are you opening, how deep are you moving through the material, sort of assessing what kind of a hacker you are, right? What are the choices that you're making with the very obvious choices? And so based on that, you're receiving this symbol, and then sort of the gaming experience hopefully goes from being outside of you and really starts moving into your own personal device via the QR code and receiving your own prophecy becoming personal to you. And so we develop these three symbols which represent three large language models that are unique to the sort of archetypes that we've developed and associated with those player behaviors. So I feel like there's so many obvious and not so obvious places that interactivity is taking place and touching on the narrative and changing and creating a more customized experience for the audience.
Yeah, I think it gave me this experience of having an open-ended type of like I could do anything because I'm at a computer terminal, but also like very directed in a way that was taking me on a journey. And what do you do with people don't solve a puzzle? Do you stop it, or they just don't see the full, like, I'm just trying to get a sense of the failure states and how you deal with failure states, and if you deal with them differently in a festival context versus how the game is going to be, where, you know, a big part of games are failures, but sometimes narrative games you don't have as many failure states. So just trying to get a sense of how you deal with failure.
Well, I've never been really good with failure in general.
Maybe you can talk about the two versions and how we actually created a festival version. Yeah. And that has a different failure state than the actual game.
So, thank you. So, the game version of this, right, it has failure. And the failure is just, you're stopped. You cannot proceed until you figure this out. But what we know from our testing that we've done is that if the material is on the desktop, if someone's got gaming experience, they know the solution is there. So they're going to just kind of tap, 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 figure things until they kind of figure it out and then kind of get that done. In the version that we brought to Ken and brought to Venice, knowing that this is much more of a cinephile audience, we actually created a beacon. So that particular app, that particular window that needed to get opened up would always kind of have that. So as a result, that beacon allows you to kind of follow through. So there is really no kind of failure that can happen. And it's just really more of like, in line with what Vasiliki was saying, is like, the question doesn't become about whether you fail. The question becomes about how quickly are you navigating this? What are the moral choices that you're making and how fluid you are? So we've had people who are disengaged for most of it and are loving it because they're seeing it as a movie, you know? And so as a result, that just creates a different kind of player. We're going to call them a player. Somebody who's like experienced gamers are kind of zipping through the material and are making much more aggressive choices because they know that they can kind of tap all of these things. They're going deep, deep, deep. So that's really kind of been our approach to when the project does in its full fruition come out as a game. We're now going to offer both versions of it because we see the validity of both those who want to challenge themselves and those who are much more interested in maybe having a little bit more of less challenging situations, allow them to really go through that story. And as we're seeing from games just in general, the challenge isn't about getting people now engaged. If you have a story that's engaging, if you've got mechanics and a gameplay that's engaging, the challenge is about getting them to finish it. And so for us, it's really important that people actually finish this because we're trying to tell the story. And so that's really kind of like the mindset behind that.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's going to be an option to do both. Or you're going to be, okay, yeah. I'm seeing that a lot more in different games as well. Yeah. Like the story mode or narrative mode and then the more kind of puzzle or game mode. Yeah. So
I should add, you know, with 1979 and whenever you're dealing with, let's talk about the medium, right? So this is live action combined with UI, UX to emulate your screen. As a result, there are greater challenges when it comes to live action because you're locked to what you've got. So you can only do a certain number in order to kind of sell the idea of like endless fluid kind of choices. When it comes to animation, 3D modeling, motion capture, Unreal, all that, you can continually just build endless, endless amount of branches because you can move your cameras around within that 3D world. You can manipulate things continually. So I think that's also acknowledging the challenge of trying to make sure that the cinema side of this thing really, really comes out and shines. Zara's performance shines. So as a result, maybe we are a little bit limited rather than trying to give you what you could do through traditional kind of animated 3D games.
Great. And finally, what do you each think is the ultimate potential of this type of immersive media, interactive games, and Verite stories, and what they might be able to enable?
Well, I mean, I think we're really excited. I think what's exciting about Lily in particular is I think we're scratching the surface of what can become an interesting new genre or niche within gaming. I mean, her story by Sam Barlow and Immortality that he's done, those have always been kind of this FMV live action combined with choices that you can make. The ability to bring that into real time, so rather than it being that you're reviewing a bunch of material that's already been shot, so you know that there's a limitation, we think we're just scratching the surface. And the potential of this project, so this project being what we anticipate to be a four-hour game that will be available on Steam, PC, you know, consoles and so forth, we see that we can actually start doing smaller, shorter versions of it with different types of stories that will allow people to kind of engage without having to need a tutorial, without it having to feel like a game. And so when people are binging TV series the way that they are, why are we just not making incredible stories in a medium that people are familiar with but bringing about some interactivity? So I think what you're seeing with Lily is an evolution of our work of over 10 years of coming to a place where now the, I hate to say this, but the audience and the industry has caught up to us to say, hey, you know what? We can engage with stories like this. We can engage with cinema like this. It can be interactive. It doesn't have to be over the top difficult. So this genre, which we're calling screen life thrillers for games, is going to be this hybrid of narrative experiences with light interactivity. What we see here is a potential of a narrative interactive game that can be 4 hours long or could be broken down into 5-minute episodes and just be an hour long. And we're not doing this because we're like, oh, this is Ink Stories. We believe that this is a movement that's going to take place that other game developers are going to start adopting and start bringing in. Because what's interesting now in the gaming world, it's no longer about the AAA games. In fact, it's about the outliers. It's about those interesting stories, and it's about those interesting nuanced experiences, game mechanics that haven't been done. And so as a result, I think this is exactly on the forefront of that. So we're super excited about what we can kind of do with this.
Yeah, and I guess coming from more of a philosophical perspective is like, what is the role of storytelling, art, and technology coming together as we look into this sort of abyss of a future? Not in a dystopian way at all, but I think it will just continue evolving, and it's sort of, you know, on our quest to know thyself, I think our tools of storytelling and interrogating who we are as humans and our sort of place in the world and how this whole sort of like strange ecosystem that we've engineered comes together, I think the tools are changing, but the core DNA of the stories we want to tell are still similar. And so I think the potential is truly endless, and it's sort of like our obligation as storytellers and sort of thoughtful creators and artists to continue interacting with these technologies and sort of holding the flame to keep it honest as best as we can as we're pressured against these big corporate systems. And so I just think, you know, I think that's it. I think our sort of quest, or I'll speak personally, my quest is how do we tell these stories through technology in order to question our limited beliefs, you know, and expand our greater containers of consciousness and understand each other better and hopefully make a better world.
and create potentially a flagpole so that other folks that want to kind of make games like this, especially on a global level, you know, a lot of the things that we have available to us are just not accessible to folks to be able to kind of make games. What we're doing here is showing that you can actually create something extremely entertaining, extremely thought-provoking, without having to have a depth of kind of software engineering background, but that like a good story, and potentially through the camera on your phone in some programming, you can create really, really vibrant experiences. And I think that those barriers have always kept some storytellers, especially global storytellers, back from being able to create these. And I think hopefully this opens up the potential that you can do it.
Right. And is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community? Any final thoughts?
I think it's interesting to see Lily as a part of the immersive experience. We're very much an outlier, using that word again, because this very much XR element of it. And I think what's been just incredible feedback, and I hope the project is going to be showing in multiple different places as it kind of tours and travels around, is like, the ability to engage with something immersive does not necessarily mean having to put on a headset. And I think a lot of people might be losing some of that in terms of, by audiences who aren't familiar, just assuming that it's virtual reality. So I think what we've created here, and there's such incredible examples also around us, that a game put in the right space with a set of headphones, with a single mouse and a screen right there, can actually be just as immersive. So I feel like hopefully it allows us to define the potential of what immersive experiences could be.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks so much for joining me here on the podcast. I really enjoyed playing through Lily. And yeah, I do feel like it was a very immersive experience, and kind of the magic circle that's set up as you're walking through this really vast installation with a lot of security cameras. And as I'm playing, there's a video of someone else that looked like, oh, that's probably someone else that was recorded playing that. So it's giving this feeling of, oh, I'm being watched. And so it had all this kind of meta aspects that go above and beyond of what it would have been like to let's say, just play this at home on my own computer, but playing it in the festival context and this installation with other people at the same time. And just really enjoyed the story and looking forward to see where you continue to kind of remix Macbeth in this new way of this surveillance Big Brother technology where you're embodying the anti-hero. And just really curious to see where you take the story here in the future. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you. Thanks, Ken. It's always a pleasure chatting with you and appreciate the in-depth questions and allowing us to share Lily with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for all the tremendous work you do and bringing the community together and archiving all of this. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage, and hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.